I think we have to start roughly about 10 years ago or so, when there was a very small amount of information suggesting that people who had been exposed to traumatic events had more adverse health outcomes. So, for example, there was a study that was done by the RAND Corporation, and what they did was they looked at childhood maltreatment and the number of sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect, etc. And what they found was that the greater the number of traumatic episodes during childhood, especially those who had three or four or more traumatic episodes, the greater the likelihood of chronic lung disease, stroke, any cancer, ischemic heart disease. They also found that increased childhood maltreatment, abuse, et cetera, was associated with poor health behaviors. In other words, people who had more traumatic episodes were more likely not to exercise, to have high body mass indices greater than 35, which is pretty obese, more likely to be smoking, et cetera. So that's the kind of evidence that was out there, mostly self-report. There was a very important study that came out of Lebanon during the Lebanon Civil War, where they looked at citizens of Beirut, Lebanon, and surrounding areas, and found that people who were exposed to more war events were much more likely to have cardiovascular disease, particularly stenosis, coronary artery disease, as diagnosed by cardiac catheterization. So this was not self-report. That's why this study was so important. Basically, this was an examination of people, and the more the war stress, the greater the cardiovascular disease and other medical problems as well. And there's a chapter that I and Paula Schnurr wrote back in 1995, and we looked at all of the literature that was out there. And it was all about trauma and health. Remember, I've not talked about PTSD yet. And if we clustered the traumas into basically four categories, military trauma, you know, war zone trauma, sexual trauma, rape, childhood sexual assault, natural disasters, floods, hurricanes, earthquakes, et cetera, and then other kinds of traumas, motor vehicle accidents, et cetera. And if we looked at different ways of tabulating adverse health outcomes, whether it was self-report, clinical utilization, illness as defined by a physical examination, as in the Lebanon coronary heart disease study I just told you about, or mortality, there was a consistent pattern that the greater the amount of traumatic exposure, the greater the likelihood of adverse health outcomes. In no case did it go the other way. In other words, in no case did traumatic exposure seem to protect people against adverse health outcomes. So that was the data, again, about 10 years ago or so. And then people started saying, well, how does exposure to a traumatic episode, how does that possibly result in poor health outcomes? And the model that has had the best support experimentally, empirically, is that it's not the trauma exposure itself, but it's when people who've been exposed to a traumatic episode develop PTSD, so that it really appears not to be the trauma exposure, but the PTSD. And the folks who have PTSD are the ones who are more likely to have the adverse health outcomes. At least that was what Paula Schnurr and I speculated back in 1995. Well, in the last 10 years, I'm happy to say that there has been some data. There wasn't data before, and there's not a lot of it, but let me share as much of it with you as I can. I ought to say at the outset that there's a wonderful book that came out about 2 years ago called Trauma and Health by Paula Schnurr, S-C-H-N-U-R-R, and Bonnie Green. And that really does summarize the literature. And there's been very little new since that time. But there was a study that came out in 1997. And here we're trying to see what is the relationship between PTSD and poor health outcomes. And this was a study done with Vietnam veterans by Joe Boscarino. And what he found was that people with PTSD were much more likely to have any medical problem, and particularly respiratory problems, nervous system problems, musculoskeletal problems, digestive problems, circulatory problems, etc. another study that Paula Schnur and I and Bonnie Green did with World War II veterans exposed to mustard gas came up with the same basic result, that people who had full PTSD were much more likely to report pain, fatigue, role impairment, decrements in physical function, illness. And what was interesting about our study was that it seemed almost to be a linear relationship, that people with partial PTSD were also more likely to have adverse health problems than non-PTSD people, but to have less problems than those with full PTSD. So again, a story was starting to emerge. Another study done by Paula Schnur with veterans in the normative aging study who had been followed longitudinally for 50 years, these were World War II veterans who were very healthy when they started, found that those with PTSD were much more likely to develop peripheral artery disease, gastrointestinal problems, dermatological problems, and musculoskeletal problems. And finally, the question of mortality is that there are two studies. One was with Gulf War veterans, again showing that people with PTSD were much more likely to have increased mortality. And a very new study that came out from the New York Academy of Medicine by Joe Boscarino, reanalyzing data with Vietnam veterans, showing that veterans with PTSD were much more likely to have early death and much more likely to die from cardiovascular diseases, cancer, and what they call external causes, meaning motor vehicle accidents, suicides, homicides, etc. But for purposes of this talk, the real important data are the fact that there were increased risk for terminal cardiovascular and cancer. Looking at clinical utilization, which is, you know, and again, an important issue. I mean, primary care practitioners, I don't have to tell you, you're very busy, and some of the people that request services don't seem to be always the ones that are in the greatest physical distress. And looking at high utilizers at the Boston VA Medical Center, they found that people with PTSD and depression, or both, were much higher utilizers of primary care services than those without. So the first question was then, how does traumatic exposure lead to poor health? And at least one of the answers that I'm proposing is that it's mediated by PTSD. Second question is, are the effects of PTSD unique from the effects of other psychiatric disorders? For example, one of the biggest psychiatric problems encountered anywhere, but particularly in a primary care practice, is depression. And certainly other anxiety disorders are likely to show up as well. And again, Boscarino, looking at Vietnam veteran study that was done by the Centers for Disease Control back in the mid-80s, looking at electrocardiograms, found that people with PTSD had a distinctive abnormality in their electrocardiogram that was distinguishable from problems encountered for people with depression or other anxiety disorders. In particular, people with PTSD were more likely to have atrioventricular defects, an infarction pattern, any EKG abnormality. So the story is getting a little more interesting, isn't it? It's not just any psychiatric problem, but that PTSD seems to have a distinctive impact on health that we're beginning maybe to be able to tease apart from the impact of depression or other things. Other data has suggested PTSD people have higher systolic blood pressures, greater heart rate. So part of the picture suggests that there is greater sympathetic activation, greater cardiovascular activity among people with PTSD as contrasted with those without PTSD. And there are a number of different factors, and I don't really have time to go into all of them right now, but certainly some of the psychological alterations associated with PTSD are known to affect cardiovascular disease, such as hostility, such as depression, such as risky health behaviors, whether it's drinking, smoking, promiscuous sexual behavior, intravenous drug use, etc. So clearly there is a psychological component to that. There's a biological component, which I'll talk about in a moment. And so there are a number of different reasons that we can postulate about why a PTSD might be a risk factor for a medical illness. I'm going to focus on some of the biological problems because I think that they're illustrative and very useful. As many of you know, there's been a lot of work in the past on the impact of chronic stress on health, and the chronic stress primarily mediated by excessive activation of the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal cortical system, the HPA system, and affecting a lot of downstream systems, the sympathetic nervous system, and many of the hormonal systems, the immunological systems, et cetera, and chronic stress and chronic stress syndrome, and I'm referring greatly to some of the work of Bruce McEwen and others, has been clearly implicated in a number of medical problems. Well, if you look at the biological alterations associated with PTSD, what you see is some similarities. There's not complete overlap, but a number of the problems that we see in chronic stress are also found in PTSD. In some cases, the abnormalities in PTSD are different than those in chronic stress, but they're abnormal nonetheless. So let me just briefly tell you about some of the changes that a person with PTSD will have in his or her body, his or her physiology, which is associated with the PTSD disorder. As with chronic stress, there's going to be dysregulation of the HPA system, increased corticotropin releasing factor, variable changes in cortisol levels. There is excessive sympathetic nervous system arousal, higher blood pressure, startle responses, disrupted sleep, hyperreactivity. The adrenergic system is hyperreactive, and there are other changes associated with the adrenergic and sympathetic abnormalities. Also, we see changes in the opioid system, which may have a relationship to chronic pain. And as you can imagine, you know, many people's traumatic episodes are the result of injuries. And the pain from that injury is often a traumatic reminder. So in many cases, the PTSD and the chronic pain problems are inextricably related to one another, and you really need to treat both of them together. There's abnormal thyroid activity, actually elevated T3s. We just showed that in some research, as others have shown. The reproductive system seems to be suppressed, and there's some real question about whether women with PTSD are more liable to have complications of their pregnancy or even congenital abnormalities such as conotruncal defects, neural tube defects, and there's some data to support that, and we're actually doing some research on that. Impairment of the growth axis, some question about whether or not some of the failure to thrive kids that we see may be kids that have been traumatized, abused, neglected, what have you, because there is suppression of growth hormone, et cetera. Problems with bone development. Metabolic syndrome X seems to be associated with chronic stress, and there's some emerging evidence that it may be associated with PTSD. And finally, in the immunological system, there seems to be a chronic immunosuppression, which, you know, raises susceptibility to illness, but also an episodic exacerbation of the inflammatory system, so that recurrent problems such as rheumatoid arthritis, fibromyalgia, other kinds of stress-related problems, migraine headaches, etc., may be exacerbated on re-exposure to traumatic stress. So what have I said? What I've said is that the reason why exposure to trauma seems to be a risk factor for medical illness is seems only when that exposure results in PTSD. And then I've argued that it is the pathophysiology of PTSD itself, which is an abnormal pathophysiology, which produces a general disruption in the body's homeostatic balance, what we call allostatic load, that increases this susceptibility. And the data are, you know, convincing. There's been very little data to suggest otherwise. So the question is what to do about it. Well, the other piece of this puzzle is that people with PTSD are much more likely to seek primary care treatment than mental health treatment. Sometimes they'll also seek specialty care internists, OBGYN, orthopedists, rheumatologists, etc. But generally, the general gateway into the healthcare system is through the primary care system. And that's true for depressed patients as well, but I think it appears to be even more the case with primary care practitioners. And what we've been discovering with depression is that primary care practitioners have gotten very good at detecting depression in their practices, treating it in the primary care setting, and in many cases never needing to make a referral to a mental health specialist, but being able to treat their patients quite well. This is important for many patients, and since I work in the Veterans Department of Veterans Affairs and have been working very closely with the military side, with the Department of Defense in terms of returnees from Iraq and Afghanistan, and on the civilian side with Health and Human Services, Substance Abuse Mental Health, the Services Administration, basically direct all the FEMA dollars to mental health treatment. It becomes important to recognize that many of the people who may be psychiatrically most at risk are those who are seeking treatment not from mental health practitioners but from primary care specialists. Furthermore, particularly in military and veteran settings, but also in civilian settings, as you all know, there's a stigma against mental illnesses, and people are very secretive and even embarrassed about having mental health problems such as depression or PTSD, whereas they'll talk very openly about their gallstones or their heart disease or their cancer. So we have a much better chance, I think, of identifying these people within a primary care setting because many of them wouldn't be caught dead in a mental health clinic. And also, I think that we have a good ways of treating them within the primary care setting. In fact, one of the areas that I've been working both in civilian, veteran, and military settings is to try to promote integrated primary behavioral health care systems so that there can be ideally one-stop treatment within a primary care clinic for people with mental health problems as well as their medical problems. And, of course, the two are not mutually exclusive. The example of chronic pain is only one of many. And one of the things that we've developed at the National Center for PTSD is a four-question primary care screener that the military is using now and a number of civilian primary care practitioners are using. And I'll quickly read the questions to you. But if a person endorses three out of the four items on the question, then the likelihood that he or she has PTSD is very great, and it warrants a more detailed, in-depth look. And those of you familiar with the PTSD diagnosis know that there are really four clusters of symptoms. There are the re-experiencing symptoms, the nightmares, intrusive thoughts. There are the avoidance symptoms. There are the psychic numbing, emotionally shut down symptoms. And there are the hyper-arousal symptoms. So each of these questions asks about one of these four clusters. And I'll read it to you very quickly. It is, in your life, have you ever had any experience that was so frightening, horrible, or upsetting that in the past month you, one, have had nightmares about it or thought about it when you did not want to, so that's the re-experiencing symptoms. Two, you tried hard not to think about it or went out of your way to avoid situations that reminded you of it, so that is the avoidance symptoms. Three, were constantly on guard, watchful, or easily startled, that's the hyperarousal symptoms. Or four, felt numb or detached from others or detached from activities or from your surroundings. So those are the four questions, one about re-experiencing, one about avoidant, one about arousal, and one about numbing symptoms. And as I said, what we find is that this scale has performed so well that the military is now using it. We're using it in VA for all primary care patients. And if the patient says yes to three of those four questions, the likelihood that he or she has PTSD is somewhere in the neighborhood of 65% to 70%, so a high rate of suspicion. So that what we're now proposing is that using this PTSD screener, that you then consider treating the PTSD along with the rheumatoid arthritis, along with the pain, along with the diabetes, along with the heart disease, or what have you. And this is an area where, we're just starting to do this kind of work. There's been a lot done with depression, and PTSD is the new kid on the block. But, the good news is that there are two medications. They're both antidepressants. They're both SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. One is sertraline or Zoloft, and the other is paroxetine or Paxil. And they both have FDA approval for use in PTSD. The data suggests that other SSRIs are also effective, but, in terms of the FDA, only two have gotten past the very strict, rigorous screening criteria for FDA approval. So what we recommend is that people who do have PTSD, and if you're looking at Katrina survivors, the likelihood that you're going to see PTSD is very great. The data from the Gulf Coast indicate that because the storm was not just such a devastating event in and of itself, but because of the relocation, because of some of the awful events that people had to endure in the New Orleans Convention Center or complete loss of their towns and communities and the separation from family and social supports, et cetera. So that we think that PTSD is something that needs to be high on your checklist when you're doing an evaluation on these individuals. And our recommendation is if they do have PTSD, to put them on an SSRI and give them a good, if you can maintain contact, at least a good 6-week, ideally 10-week trial. If they don't benefit, then I think it's time to refer to the mental health folks. But from our experience with depression, what we're finding is that 80% of people who screen positive for depression and are put on an SSRI can be treated quite effectively and quickly and relatively effortlessly within the primary care clinic. The good news about that is not just that you're going to help your patients get better, but that you're going to conserve the usually scarce mental health backup resources so that when you do make a referral, it's probably somebody who really needs mental health treatment. In addition to the medications that I've mentioned, which I think a primary care practitioner would feel quite comfortable utilizing, there are very, very powerful psychological techniques, cognitive behavioral treatments, exposure therapy, cognitive therapy, stress inoculation therapy, so that if your patients don't benefit from the medication and you refer them to a mental health practitioner, again, there's very good likelihood that the people with PTSD can get effective treatment and can have a symptom amelioration, if not complete remission. If you want more information about PTSD, I would suggest that you look at the website of the National Center for PTSD, and that is www.ncptsd for National Center for PTSD, .va for Veterans Affairs, .gov, G-O-V for government. So that's www.ncptsd.va.gov.